It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. And as some of you know, former Mayor Ed Koch was scheduled to be on the program at this time to discuss the new documentary about him and to help us launch a series with former mayors in this mayoral transition year. Unfortunately, as you've been hearing on the news, Mayor Koch was admitted to the hospital on Monday with fluid in his lungs, which made him miss the premiere of the film, which was at MoMA last night, and is making him miss his date with us. We hope to have Mayor Koch back as soon as he recovers. But in the meantime, we have the next best thing, the director of Koch, Neil Barsky. Neil, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And let me dive right in with one of the great sequences in the film, which I watched and enjoyed last night.
Great.
Ed Koch as mayor in 1978, his first year, testifying before the United States Senate, asking for help with the city close to default. And listen carefully, folks, and you'll hear Koch then Koch reminiscing about that hearing now, and you'll hear a couple of U.S. senators questioning him.
We have not come for a handout. We're not asking you for a grant. We are imposing management standards that never...
If they gave us federal loan guarantees, that would allow us to restructure debt and a whole host of things.
Senator, you are in error on that.
If they're working productively only half the time, you can fire half of them.
Yeah,
it's that simple arithmetic.
Well,
and get the same amount of work done.
Senator,
why not?
Senator, the city of New York does not have a Berlin Wall around it. And the middle class that make it possible to pay for the services, that provide not only their genius, their expertise, but the tax dollars, they will go across the river. And I know, Senator Hines, you would not want to participate in that, but that being one of the areas that they might go to.
You'll lend us that statue that says, give us your tired, your poor.
We may have to sell that statue.
We may have to sell a scene from the new documentary, Koch, filmmaker Neil Barsky, my guest. Do you want to talk about that scene at all?
Sure. It's a critical scene because part of the point of this film is to evoke a New York that is no longer, in many ways, fortunately. And when Koch became mayor, the city was on the ropes financially. It had a brush with bankruptcy. It couldn't return to the bond market. And so then in the very early stages of his term in 1978, he went down to Washington to secure guarantees from the Senate Finance Committee. That was Senator Proxmire of Wisconsin and Senator Hines from Pennsylvania who were talking to him. And he had assured them that the city could get its act together fiscally. And he did, and they gave the guarantees. So he showed his brand of humor, which was always engaging and a critical part of his effectiveness. But he also showed, you know, he had been a congressman for 9 years. So he had a certain camaraderie when he went to Washington, and he knew the way Washington worked. So he's very effective. In those days, as you may recall, New York was a pariah in the country. You know, Gerald Ford dropped dead. It was a butt of jokes on Johnny Carson. And so it was a very critical time for the city, and it could have gone either way.
Mm-hmm.
History is not inevitable.
And the film, including that scene, makes it look like some of what he did was good fiscal management to bring the city back. But a lot of it was being upbeat and leading a kind of revival of optimism.
Yes. So first he had to sort of he was excellent at saying no. So first he had to, you know, he had no leeway. The city had to have a balanced budget then. If you recall, there was state overseer. But he had to do it. And he had to say no to many key constituencies, which he did not mind doing. And then, of course,
seems to relish saying no.
For better and for worse. Yes. But at that time, he was the perfect guy for that job at that time. Then in 1980, you may recall, there was a subway strike. The city was shut down. He didn't rail against the unions. He wasn't union baiting. But he certainly tried to revive the spirits of the city. He got on the Brooklyn Bridge, said, walk across the bridge. We're going to work. We're not going to let these bums bring us to our knees. And in a fairly unacerbic way, in a fairly uncontentious way, he definitely got the morale back of the city. And it's very hard to recall, if you weren't around then, how much New York needed it and how down in the dumps the city actually was then.
Now, any mayor who spends 3 terms in office and has strong opinions and who says no will make friends and make enemies. Koch gets credited for bringing the city back in the ways you've been describing. But you also don't shrink in this film from what a racially polarizing figure he was in office. You have Sam Roberts, the great Metro reporter from The Times, saying Koch's brain was missing a synapse when it came to race. And here's another clip from the film. This is City Councilman Charles Barron on the floor of City Council just a year or two ago, and they were deciding to rename the Queensboro Bridge the Ed Koch Bridge.
Y'all got to be kidding. A bridge named after Ed Koch. This is not the Ed Koch that the black community knows. It's the Ed Koch that every time we asked for something, he said, I will not be intimidated. And then he asked the rest of you, how am I doing? This is a tale of two cities. Maybe that's how he was for the white part of the city. But for blacks, Ed Koch was our nemesis. This is a disgrace to have a bridge named after Ed Koch. I vote no, unequivocally, absolutely no.
City Councilman Charles Barron, and although he is, you know, among the quicker to see things in racially polarizing terms, he certainly was not alone in that view of Ed Koch. The things that you portray in the movie that were polarizing range from his closing of Sydenham Hospital in Harlem after he campaigned on promising to keep it open, to insensitive remarks after the racial street murder of teenager Yusuf Hawkins in 1989 in Howard Beach. Did he acknowledge in his interviews with you having a synapse missing on the black experience during his mayoralty?
He said in the film that he made a mistake by closing Sydenham. He underestimated how important it was to the black community. But in a larger sense, I think he would defend his record. He would say, I treat everybody the same. You push me, I push you back. And that in and of itself is true. He did have alienated other constituencies during the course of his mayoralty. But he became mayor at a time that the city was racially fractured. I think the African-American community felt a little disenfranchised, like they didn't have a voice at City Hall. And so that form of contentiousness, which may have seemed charming in some venues, when it came to New York City in the 70s and 80s, it was sort of toxic. And I think, you know, in those days, I think the African-American leadership might have been more demagogic as well. And so, you know, he liked to fight with the leaders, but most blacks were not leaders. They were just citizens of the city. And I think they felt, it's tough to generalize, but I think the votes would suggest that they felt a bit left out, like he didn't care about them. Interestingly, when we did the film today, I think the amount of vitriol and resentment towards Koch in the black community has gone down over the years. I think their experience with Rudy Giuliani maybe made Koch look good. And I think Koch has done a lot to repair, to build some bridges to the black community. He's buddies now with Al Sharpton. He supported President Obama in the last two elections. So you don't find the sort of hostility that you would have, that you did when he was mayor.
And that, as I think you correctly say, lingers in a much more visceral way and relevant way with Giuliani's legacy in the black community. But as we look at the transitional moment of this year's mayoral race, this makes me look back and realize that this very liberal city has not really had a liberal mayor.
Or a Democratic mayor.
Or a Democratic mayor, certainly. But in New York terms, not a Democratic mayor since Dinkins was elected in 93 and then elected in 89 and was defeated in 93 by Giuliani. But if you sort of count Koch, then it goes all the way back to the 1970s that we haven't had a classically liberal mayor, at least in New York terms. Did Koch expound on that to you?
Well, you didn't say the name John Lindsay, but I think he sort of personified, even though he was both a Republican and a Democrat, he sort of personified.
As was Koch, at least to some degree. Didn't he get the Republican nomination in one of his races Democrat?
Yes. I would say Koch would call himself undefinable. He really, you know, walked to his own drum. He's very hawkish on Israel. He's a civil libertarian. And he's actually not ideological, is the way I would put it. I think he called himself a liberal with sanity. But I do think there was an ideology behind the mayor, and I don't think he ever articulated it. But I think if you look back, it's pretty clear. He was the first, I think, Democratic politician who understood implicitly that for government to do well, it has to be solvent. So his first 6 years, he fixed the fiscal situation and the city's return to the bond market. He said no. He alienated people. But then he turned around in 1986 and the city spent $5 billion renovating its housing stock. something that he doesn't get a lot of credit for and he doesn't take a lot of credit for. But it revolutionized the city. And I guess Bill Clinton maybe also had that message. You know, he's conservative, he's pro-business. But then once the government has the means at its disposal, it can do magnificent things. And Koch did not shrink from that. So in many ways, he was a big city liberal, although rhetorically, he was certainly something else.
Listeners, you want to weigh in on the Koch years? If you're old enough to have been around then, how do you remember the Koch years? Did Mayor Koch's legacy, whatever you thought of him at the time, change for you over the years? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show as we talk with Neil Barsky, the director of the new documentary, Koch, which premiered last night at the Museum of Modern Art. Are you going to get a general release?
Yes, it's going to open Friday at the Lincoln Plaza and Angelica Theaters in Manhattan. And then hopefully it will expand into other theaters in the boroughs and the suburbs. And we're having a national release early March.
Let's take a phone call. And we'll hear some more clips from the film, by the way. We have a couple more yet to go. But Michael in the East Village, you're on the air. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
A few years ago, there was a eulogy to Ed Koch at the Museum of the City of New York.
And we point out that he's still alive, but go ahead.
Yes, okay. It was a tribute. I guess it was about New York City mayors. It was some series they were doing. They had a panel discussion. Full auditorium, and Al Sharpton was on the panel, and it was just amazing, his tribute to Ed Koch. It was very humorous, how he had camped out in Ed Koch's office, and he wasn't going to leave until this and that, and, Ed Koch threw him in jail, and he was relaying this situation, but he said, Ed Koch will never tell you something and just to tell you that. He will always tell you the truth. If he's not going to do it, he's not going to say, well, maybe. He'll just say no. And it was just so humorous and so it was really a moving statement to Ed Koch.
Michael, thank you. And so was that a political a burying the hatchet of political convenience between Koch and Sharpton, or did they really have some kind of deeper thing looking back at their both of their roles in the old days?
I think Al Sharpton has evolved a lot from those times. I think he's a part of the mainstream. He's got a TV show. He's not as combative and demagogic as he was. So I can't get into his head, but clearly that's a very different Al Sharpton than when Koch was mayor. And he was not quite Koch's nemesis, but he was one of several leaders that baited Koch, and Koch baited them back.
One of the scenes where I thought you kind of took a stand in the film as director was in kind of defending him from the charges by ACT UP during the late 80s that he wasn't doing enough about AIDS or gay rights. You show some of the old protest footage, but you also have people tick off a list of things he did do, from public health measures to anti-discrimination measures. Mm-hmm. What did you conclude about that part of his mayoralty?
Well, I'd say his relationship with what he did during the AIDS crisis and his relationship with the gay community is one of the more complicated to this day and contentious legacies. I think the city and the Koch administration was slow to waking up to the plague that AIDS was. And I think they downplayed it like many places did. And I don't, with the benefit of hindsight, they should have done more. And that's just, there's no getting around that. They did catch up. The city did massive things in the mid-80s and late 80s, closed the bathhouses, gave away condoms, free needles. But there's no question that the city was a little slow. It gets complicated because there's a perception in the world out there, and we deal with this, that Ed Koch is gay, and that because he was gay and he was a closeted gay guy, he didn't want to take on gay issues. And there's a lot of bitterness over this very issue, and he's really been called to task a lot. And on that point, I would contest that. Because I think while he was slow to confront the AIDS crisis, he was way out front with gay civil rights. In January 1978, he signed an executive order for the city saying they cannot bar people for employment based on sexual preference. And then he railroaded through, or he negotiated through, a gay rights bill in 1986 when the leadership of the city council changed. These were not things that had no political cost. He did this, I think, on principle. And he certainly was left vulnerable to the same issues that he's a gay man promoting gay rights. So I'm splitting hairs a little bit. I think it's fair to say to challenge his record on AIDS. But – and this is purely my own opinion. I don't think his motive was because he was in the closet. But I'll say one other thing if I could. I think a lot of the resentment towards him on this issue and on race and on other issues was not really policy specific. I think he had a hard time showing empathy. And I think if he'd given a speech in the midst of the AIDS crisis and said, this is the worst human tragedy work, you know, and really showed that he understood the human dimensions of the crisis, things would have been different. So I think he had a hard time relating to people's pain, and it's not just the gay community. And I think that's really where the mystery of Ed Koch is to be found.
And here's part of the clip from the film when you become the 10 millionth person in recent years to ask Koch if he will disclose his sexual orientation.
You know, they want to know your position on 100 issues. They can ask the newest question. Are you gay? Are you straight? I'm not going to let it happen if I can prevent it. And so I have taken the position in response to the basic question, it's none of your business.
And it's not bleeped in the movie. Right. We bleeped it out for the radio, keep our FCC license. But did he swear much during your interviews, or was there a special place in his vocabulary for the sexuality question?
He swore several times in the interview over the sexuality question.
Specifically
and not exclusively. I mean, he also sweared in other times. Yeah. But I think this is something he has a practiced response. And sometimes by saying the same thing over and over, you're actually revealing a lot about yourself. So while he didn't say anything different in this movie than he has in the past, I think we show somebody who is not willing to go to certain places with us as filmmakers or with anybody. And for the record, we did not ask him if he's gay. What we did say, Brian, was if you were gay, were you ever tempted to use your position as mayor of the city to really change lives? Mm-hmm. And I want to – and I know I'm splitting hairs here, but I didn't feel we would be adding to the, you know, to the body of work about Koch by simply asking him point blank.
Steve on Roosevelt Island. You're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. I was a little – first off, shocked that the film came out. I mean, Koch, for me, is not a good guy. I mean, I think he was a master manipulator, and he was very clear in terms of, you talk about his inability to be empathetic. I mean, when he was campaigning in the Jewish community with Beth Meyerson and saying to Jewish people, look, you know, wouldn't you make a great first lady? I mean, this guy knows how to work a crowd. But to me, his enduring legacy will be that he was very skillful at communicating to white New Yorkers that he was not going to challenge or change in any way the privileges that white New Yorkers enjoy. And his administration, whether it be the beat cop or various policies like closing siding hammer that he did, he didn't change any of that. I mean, he just went right for that. And unfortunately, a lot of, I think, Caucasian New Yorkers, you know, bit and swallowed the whole thing. And to see it, you know, 25 years later, we're talking about him like he's our great, you know, Jewish uncle who's a nice guy and, you know, just failed to be a little empathetic here and there, I think is glossing over his history.
Steve, thank you. Do you feel that you're doing that in the film?
I agree with a lot of what you said, and I don't think we're glossing over it. I think we're dealing with it as honestly as we could. But I did say, and I think the film tries to show, that he did disenfranchise in his rhetoric and in some of his policies, but more in his rhetoric, a lot of the city, a lot of the non-white city. And I think we spent some time on that and acknowledged that. I think his actual policies, the way he spent money and the way money was spent in the second part of his administration – on housing and redeveloping, you know, the boroughs and things was very progressive for the old New Yorkers. But I definitely...
And one of the amazing lines to me in the film was from Wayne Barrett, the legendary Village Voice columnist, who says, people think that crime went down mostly because of Rudy Giuliani's policing policies. Crime went down as much because of Ed Koch's housing policies, meaning rebuilding so much of the Bronx and other parts of the city.
Yeah, I mean, that can be contested, but it's certainly a factor, and it's a factor that's never talked about. But, you know, people are complex, and Ed Koch was complex. He wasn't all good, and he wasn't all bad. And so, and he was mayor for 12 years, and the city was at war with itself. So clearly, he has a lot a lot of his legacy is unfortunate. But I think in a larger sense, the rebuilding of the cities, of the boroughs, spending $5 billion and turning the perception of New York around and restoring it to become a world-class city, as rhetorical as that may sound, I think is a very strong legacy. And it was built on by Dinkins and then Giuliani and then Mayor Bloomberg.
One more call. Tony in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello, Tony.
Good morning.
Tony, retired police captain, I see.
Yes, I am.
And during, go ahead, during the Koch years?
Well, I have to start out by prefacing it that I'm a great fan of Mayor Ed Koch. Have been for his entire career and mine. I was laid off under the Beam administration in 1975 and was laid off for approximately 33 months at that time. And our only hope was getting some sanity in City Hall and some money. Mayor Koch managed to find the money to rehire us. And during his administration, under which I was promoted twice, and that was because of his fiscal stewardship.
But go ahead, Tony. Go ahead. The thing you'd like to say. Go ahead.
I'd like to say about the mayor, out of my gratitude for that, but the fact he's the only mayor I know absolutely delighted in the job.
Mm-hmm.
I got the feeling every day that that was the job he wanted, that he wasn't looking to go somewhere else and be something else, but that he had found where he should be.
Right.
And I was always of the opinion he was in the right spot.
Well, I think there are a lot of mayors you could say that of. But do you think, Tony, that he gets a pass on crime? Because when Dinkins came in, he got all this pressure to crack down on crime, but he inherited most of that. The murder rate had gone up and up through the Koch years.
Well, the crime situation, again, I know it's been mentioned already that it was under the Giuliani administration that we got better results by changing some policies. But I'd have to say that given the fiscal...
And price, the second half of Dinkins, too. But go ahead.
Right. Well, given the way things were at the time and the amount of resources the city had, I felt that he put enough resources in the police department and that he made a yeoman's effort in trying to control crime.
Tony, thank you. And we're almost out of time, but you don't deal with that very much in
No,
the
we don't. We couldn't deal with everything. But
yeah.
I do think that the whole, you know, you mentioned what Wayne Barrett said about housing and crime. The phenomenon of low crime is not clear cut. Certainly the stabilization of the neighborhoods, Dinkins did hire 30,000 more officers, the crack epidemic waned. Mayors don't control the crime rate. I think Rudy Giuliani was the only mayor that would announce every month what the crime rate was. But crime has a way of rising and falling without mayoral approval or policies.
Well, it's certainly multifactorial. Before you go, you reveal that Koch has already picked a grave site.
Yes.
And already has had a headstone made,
mm-hmm.
complete with an epitaph.
Yes.
That, of course, he himself wrote. Here he is reciting it.
He was fiercely proud of his Jewish faith. He fiercely defended the city of New York, and he fiercely loved its people. Above all, he loved his country, the United States of America, in whose armed forces he served in World War II. And that's the whole thing.
Ed Koch from the film Koch reciting his own epitaph to filmmaker Neil Barsky, who has been our guest. Let's hope Ed Koch doesn't have to go there anytime soon and that he recovers from his hospitalization. But did that whole cemetery thing surprise you?
Well, we knew what we were getting when we went there. But the idea that a man, anyone would buy their own cemetery plot, put up a stone, write his epitaph, and then move to Trinity Cemetery. You know, he's proud of his Jewish faith, but Trinity is obviously a Protestant cemetery, is nothing if not bizarre. It's a little egomaniacal.
Well, he told you that he wanted a cemetery with hustle and bustle.
Bustling cemetery, yes. He wants a monument.
Not everyone's criteria for a burial site.
Correct, but he's very concerned about his legacy, and it was a little bizarre, a little humorous, but, you know, he, as I said earlier, he does things his own way, and there are sometimes inconsistencies, but that is definitely one of the more bizarre of his legacies.
You know you left out the John Hour. Did you ever hear about the John
Of course,
Hour?
Sure.
Back in the day, before I worked here, when Koch was mayor and WNYC was owned by the city, He ordered the station manager, Mary Nicholas, to create a weekly program where they would read the names of Johns arrested for soliciting prostitution. She thought it was over the top and refused to have programming dictated by the mayor in that way. But Koch insisted. And again, at the time, the city owned the station, and so he had the right legally. But the station manager resigned, and the John Hour lasted one show.
Mm-hmm.
So just a little WNYC addendum.
Definitely.
The movie, Koch, made by director Neil Barsky, opens Friday where again?
At the Angelica and Lincoln Square Theaters in Manhattan.
Thank you so much for coming
Thank
on.
Thank you, Brian.
I really appreciate
great.
It. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll talk to one of the union leaders involved in the school bus driver's strike, replacement drivers now on the job. Stay with us.